FCO, NTDO 212, complex.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Talking Sound podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host, coming to you from Austin, Texas. Please do not forget, the Talking Sound podcast is brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. If you're a fan of podcasting like me and want to start up a show for yourself, your friends, your family, fun, business, church, school, whatever, stop on by PodcastCadet.com today. That is all that we do there, is help people brand podcasts, start podcasts, take podcasts that they already have to the next level through podcast audits, one-on-one consultation for everything from branding to technical training, all the way through to distribution, monetization, how to turn a podcast into a podcast for your business, things like that. Stop on by, check us out. PodcastCadet.com today is PodcastCadet.com. Sorry, don't put today in there. PodcastCadet.com is the website, and the code that you want to use today is Talking20. Whenever you use Talking20 at your cart, you will save 20% off your entire purchase at PodcastCadet.com. So stop on by, check it out. If you're thinking about starting a podcast or have a podcast that you need to kind of bump up and move to the next level, stop on by, check it out. Talking20 is the code. Our guest today is Jeff Poss, who I got connected with via social media following Calton Cases. And I followed them for a while. I love their product. Being from the world of rock and roll, it was a case that I saw regularly with large touring musicians that went around, people that typically went and played overseas, that kind of stuff, and their instruments saw tons and tons of underbellies of planes and buses, things like that. That is normally where I saw Calton Cases. And when I contacted them the other day, and they were like, well, you need to talk to Jeff if you want to have somebody on the show. When I got Jeff's bio, it was like, wow, this guy is amazing. Number one, he is one of the set designers and sculptors for the amazing movie from 1992, Sidekicks, by Chuck Norris, co-produced by the amazing Mattress McInvale out of Houston, Texas, my hometown. I remember that movie was like shooting and released my junior year of high school. And just to see that, and to see somebody like Jeff, who has come from the world of sculpting through the world of Hollywood and making set pieces, designing things like that, designing huge interactive things for children's museums, to be going into the world of case making, protecting instruments, protecting art, literally using art to protect art, and using his years of knowledge of construction, things like that, to make these cases lighter, stronger, better, faster. We have the technology. We can do it. Jeff, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Man, I got to say, that is the best intro I've ever heard for anybody, and not just because it's me, but that was friggin' great, man. And I love your intro music. That is so cool. I'm a sci-fi nut, you know.
Oh, thank
I'm a
you.
Sci-fi fan. So I was like, oh, I feel at home.
That,
I really do.
That track has a little personal. I mean, of course, I make all my own background music for my shows, but that track has a personal place in my heart because that is literally the first thing that I ever recorded when I got a Moog synthesizer. That was the first
cool.
track that I ever recorded, and I was like, "That's my intro music. I can't use that." So
that's the sound the Moog's supposed to make. Man.
Exactly,
that is really cool. And as I was thinking, yeah, you were the only other person that ever saw Sidekicks, the movie Sidekicks, with
twice,
Chuck Norris.
Twice in the theater, I'm telling you.
Oh yeah, did you see it at the Gulfgate Theater?
I did not. I saw let's see, where did I see that? I saw that at Town and Country.
Oh yeah, well, I was just right down the street from you. I went to Stratford High School.
So, you did? Did you graduate from Stratford High School?
87.
Really? 87. Wow. Mm-hmm. The magic year, man.
Yeah,
the state year.
That's right. Actually, 87. Did we go to state that year?
Yeah, that was the year we went and lost. Because it was 78 that we went and won, and 87 that we went and lost. Because, yeah, we went, like, to the Astrodome. Like, I remember that. I wasn't in high school yet. I was in seventh grade, but my brother was a freshman. He graduated in 90, and I graduated in 93. So, wow.
So you just grew up right around the corner.
Yeah, man, Rocket Park, the whole bit, bud.
Yeah, all right, man. I miss H-Town, but Austin's been good to me too.
Yeah, you know, same here.
It's a good town. Houston was a great town to grow up in.
It really was,
and it was a great town to learn to make things in because it was 24/7. So you needed something, you could find it in Houston. You know, the 24-hour hardware stores.
Yep.
The huge scrap yards. We had the NASA surplus yard that we would go to.
Yep.
When I was at U of H, I mean, we just all kinds of cool stuff.
Oh,
ship
man.
Channel, there was all kinds of
places like electronics parts outlet.
Yeah, EPO, man. Oh, EPO. I built some of my very first museum exhibits there. You know, I'd go in and and LEDs. You know, they had all the overbatch LEDs.
Yeah,
I had to make I made this clear anatomical woman thing for a museum in Lubbock, I think it was, and I remember, you remember the laser disc, the big 12-inch laser disc?
Oh, yeah.
So we recorded all of the, you know, her descriptions of talking about different parts of the body on this laser disc, and I had to, you know, solder and wire all these LEDs together and programmed a little Alcorn McBride show controller, which Alcorn McBride does stuff that, like, controls whole theme parks and stuff.
Yeah.
But, man, the good old days. I remember too many staying up all night learning the solder events, you know, back then.
Wow. And
but good times.
You know, like I said, though, to be coming through that end of the industry to get to where you are now, like I said in the intro, using art and your years of artistic knowledge to literally help create art that is now protecting art, it's great.
I think that's a wonderful description. It really is, because it is part of, like, I identified with the aesthetics of the Calton case right away when I first saw it. And I just thought, you know, it's just got really nice lines to it. And Keith had spent 40 years developing that case to the new one. And most people will know the old Calton case that kind of has these sharper corners.
Yep.
But the new Calton case is rounded, and it's rounded because it deflects blows better. And a lot of the damage that would happen over 20 years with chips on that hard corner of the case. So Keith got rid of it. And you'll see in that intro video that we have on our home screen on our website
that
hard to run over because of that, too. Like,
the
tire doesn't really grip to it very well. Like, we tried to run over it. We were able to run over the head of it with the Land Cruiser, which is my old Land Cruiser, and then we tried to run over it with the Jeep, and it just, like, it scoots out because of all those rounded edges, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I absolutely think that that's really beautiful art protecting art, because so many of the instruments that go in these cases are boutique instruments, you know, that are, that if you talk to the luthiers, it is a work of art. Everyone is a sculpture to them.
Yeah.
And that's a really nice idea. I'll have to tell them that. I'm going to use that line.
Hey, if I don't see it on a case sticker, not a bumper sticker, mind you, but a case sticker.
All right.
I'll be hurt.
You know,
that's yours. Take
it. I'm glad that you mentioned
use
case stickers, because we have our old logo, which we've been using everywhere. And a lot of people said, you know, when we were kind of trying to reinvent ourselves here in Texas, that we should revamp all that stuff. And I'm like, no way, dude. That old label that's on the case is really cool.
Yeah.
And we've kept the old logo. But recently, because of social media being what it is, everybody in the music industry, like 99% of what you see is product shots, like, you know, product porn, basically just glam shots of product. And that was just getting really old to me. And we have a huge variety of finishes, interior and out, and we have like 15 different case types. But even with that, I was getting tired of seeing just shots of cases all the time. But I wanted us to be posting every day. So right around May, when we kind of got back to work here, we have a bunch of carny and misfits and, you know, art school dropout type people that work on our shop. Wait, musicians.
In Austin? So, no.
That's my clan.
No.
Man. Those are my people. Yeah. So they, you know, a bunch of them are artists. So we have extended the invitation to our whole crew to, like, design art that we'll make T-shirts out of and that we're posting on our social media. And then we also extended that into kind of the online environment, and we have people submitting art. I got 15 pieces of art this weekend from different people.
Wow.
That they're just making art using the Calton logo or a Calton case somewhere in the art in their own style. And
cool.
Man, it is so fun. It is so fun to open up the files, you know, the email on Monday morning and spend half a day going through all this art and having these conversations with artists. It's really been fun. But because of that, we're starting to turn, you know, we got a bunch of T-shirts that'll be coming out online that
are
totally different from what we've done before.
Yeah.
And we'll have a bunch of stickers. We're going to just start including stickers in people's cases and just trying to promote, you know, tag it, sticker it everywhere.
Make some Calton picks out of the, fiberglass.
Not a bad idea. We have a few Calton picks, you know, just from, like, pick companies that we printed up, but using the Calton green, you know, the forest green, or the British Racing green, excuse me.
Yes.
And, but we could make fiberglass picks, I guess. I didn't think about that. We have drops off of every case, you know, because, we lay up our cases in these molds that are deeper than the case needs to be. And then we trim the case down to whatever height it needs to be.
Exactly.
It is crazy the way we make our cases. And I go out there every day trying to scratch my head and think, is there anything different we should be doing? We spent 18 months basically completely analyzing every little nut and bolt of how we make things and looking for some efficiencies. And the reality is we make every single part of this by hand.
Yeah.
And we can't do it another way because we don't produce inventory in front of orders. Because we allow people to customize their case.
Yeah.
And because it has to fit a specific instrument. Like, yes, we sell maybe 150 dreadnoughts a year, but not every dreadnought is the same. It really isn't, you know.
A lot of people say,
oh, it's a dreadnought. And then they send us some measurements. We're like, well, really? Could you send us, you know, your measurements? And,
it's
a quarter inch difference.
Yeah, it's like it's really more between a dreadnought and a parlor guitar, but okay.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. But we love it when they get the case and they send us a note and they're like, dude, that it fits perfect. And if you've never had a perfect fitting case, it's like never having a perfect fitting shoe or something, or a jacket or something. And it is different, you know, and it's rewarding to us when it comes out just right, which is what we have to do, you know? So we have to do it all by hand. And that's it. That's just how it is. But, you know, because of that, we have all these drops, and we could make picks. I could have somebody out there stamping out fiberglass picks. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. Throw in four or five picks in the little, you know, accessory holder in every case.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's kind of like these came from your...
Yeah, these came
from
your
case originally.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That'd be really cool. But, I mean, just to go through this, folks, and like he's saying, the way that these fit, if you've ever been a stagehand, if you've ever worked venues and helped musicians load in their gear and had the privilege of just holding a Calton case, like the build quality of it. And I personally am a raging fan of the original design. And maybe it's just because I love Tron.
It's got a retro look.
I mean, it looks like the old, like, Simmons electronic drum kit.
The lines are right. I mean, it was designed, you know, back in the early 70s, really. I mean, the design got locked in the early 70s, and it stayed that way, you know, until we took over. Heath was just starting to redesign whenever he had only made a handful of cases, really, in the new molds with the new plugs.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, he was really savvy. Whenever he sold the company, he sent He sent only the plugs, which are the forms that we pull the molds off. He sent the plugs of stuff that he hadn't redesigned yet. So there was about four, like the Mando cello and trying to think what else. There was just a few. Mando cello, maybe one of the banjo cases. Not much had the sharp corners still. And then everything else was a plug with these rounded corners. And he was like, you have to do this because he had also been repairing cases over the years. I mean, that's the thing. These things are made to last
a lifetime.
A lifetime. And yeah. They didn't used to have the catch surrounds on them. And they didn't used to have those corner bumpers. They had metal bumpers or hard bumpers, like these kind of feet like that are on the bottom of couches that you slide around. And those don't take an impact very well. Like, they'll help, but, you know, they just get beat up.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
so he
I didn't
had
even
spent the last,
I didn't
yeah,
even see the latch bumpers. The latch bumpers are gorgeous. I'm sitting here looking at the website right now while we're talking. And, I mean, just the construction alone, whenever you're talking about the materials and reinforced multi-layer fiberglass shell, premium velvet interior, nickel-plated steel latches and D-rings. That's my favorite part. It's not like filler metal.
No, anything like that.
I've had numerous cases.
Buffing up. I'm sorry. I get all excited about it.
No.
You know? But we've been bumping up the thickness of the items. Like, anytime something fails, if there's more than one failure in a year, we're like, okay, we got to revisit that because there shouldn't be, you know? I mean, it's a small company. We produced 1,000 cases last year, so there should not be any failure in 1,000 parts, you know?
Yeah.
And we had in 2018, we had two D-rings just break. So we're like, that's it. We're going to bump up in thickness, you know?
Yep.
And we had some latches that the plating wasn't, you know, we've been getting our latches from the same place, but the plating wasn't right. So we just harassed them and said, look, you got to step it up a little bit. You know, it's just little subtle changes, but we implemented all of Keith's changes per his wishes because he knew what was best for the case and for the instruments, like for the longevity of the case. And we got some pushback. People were like, this doesn't look like, you know, the old cotton case. And it's like, well, it's not. It's better, stronger.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, stronger, faster, better, all that other crap. But they weren't our changes. They were Keith's changes. And Keith has been really important to, you know, keeping this company going. And, I mean, we've talked a lot. I've been over to visit him a couple times and spent some time tinkering around in his shop. And you know, he gave really good reasons for the choices he had made about the design. And anytime I have some subtle changes I want to make, I call him up and I'm like, hey, man, I'm thinking about, you know, making the beam. We call this ridge on the neck. We call it the beam because there's actually a structural piece that goes under there. And you can imagine, I mean, like, imagine a sheet of plastic, right? It's just a flat sheet of plastic, you know, wobble, wobble, wobble. If you put a couple bends in it, now it's got some rigidity to it. And that's fiberglass. It's the same way. Anything you start to put bends and folds in, it makes it structurally stronger. So we increased the, I guess, you know, just kind of the angles and the width of that beam a little bit on our new MJ case. And then we increased the width of the neck by an inch and increased the width of the headstock by an inch because it just felt like a lot of these boutique instruments that the tuners would, on some of them, would get really close to the side.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody, for the first couple of years, they were like, oh, man, these Caltons are heavy. And they're heavier than the old one. I'm like, no, they're 3 pounds lighter than the old ones, I guarantee. But yes, they're heavier by a pound or two than a carbon fiber, you know, case. And some of them are heavier than some of the other fiberglass cases on our market, but it's because they don't have the structural stuff that we put inside our case, you know? And it's like, we do three layers and we're not going to do a two layer case because it's not going to be strong enough. You know, it's just not right. But, you know, we were worried when we were making the changes to the MJ case because we are going to implement that across our whole line of products. And we thought, well, but it's going to add, you know, a quarter pound or a half pound. And we thought, well, you know, so what? It looks a lot better. It's a lot stronger.
Yeah.
It's probably made the neck, you know, I wouldn't say twice as strong as it is, but it definitely added a multiplier, maybe another 20 or 30% stronger than it was.
Oh, sure. And to look at it structurally, A, is a lot more aesthetically pleasing because it's widened out. It was much more of a defined ridge that came up almost to a point there, which was great for deflection, things like that. But like you were saying pre-show, some of that also contributes to chipping, things like that. But to actively widen that out disperses more weight, disperses more shock, things like that, and actively almost acts like a leaf spring in the middle at that point.
It's exactly right. It's like an archtop guitar is strong because of that curvature to it, you know, and that arch, really.
Yeah.
And we copied that, you know. It's like, well, they figured it out a long time ago, you know, the archtop of a violin. You can get it so, so thin, but yet it's really strong.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. We mimic that because it makes sense. You know, it's like crushing an egg. It's hard to crush an egg.
And it really, really aesthetically looks great, especially on the cutaway model. The model where, because you have your choice, that's what's great. It's not like, hey, come by our case, what's your guitar? Okay, here it is. Like at Guitar Center or, you know, Straight Music, something like that, where you go in and you go, hey, I've got a Fender. Okay, cool. Well, let's see, is it a Jaguar or this? Okay, here's your three case choices, you know. It's not like that. It's literally custom fitted, and man, like with that widened neck support, now it literally looks like you can see the instrument through the case.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
It's cool.
We are
beautiful.
Trying to bring the instrument a little bit, you know, like so you kind of know what's in it. But you know what's really cool is that Calton did not make basically a solid body electric guitar case. You know, they, ever. It was just, he would put it in a classic shell or, you know, an ES-335 would go into a bigger, you know, like a jumbo shell or a medium jumbo shell. And we still have to do that, but we did do a dedicated electric case a couple of years back, and it looks really cool because it's cut thin too. And it just, when you take one of these cases and then also, because we cut them to the height specific to the instruments, because first off, we want to have the appropriate amount of padding around it, not like excessively, like it looks weird. There's so much padding around it, but you know, we generally put about an inch around the side wall and, you know, a half inch to three quarter on top and bottom. And then we make the case as slim as it can be so that weight is appropriate to it, or, you know, we've reduced as much weight as we can. Then also, you know, it mimics what's inside of it a little bit, you know, which is cool. So,
yeah.
And, you know, we're always making new cases. We're working on, I told you that we were working on a double Mando case, which was an old case that Keith used to make. And we would get like one or two requests a year. And I just thought, you know, until I hear, you know, half a dozen or a dozen requests in 1 year, I'm just going to keep holding off on that because it's expensive to develop a new product.
It is.
We do all of it in-house, though, because you can imagine that, like, I'm not going to let somebody else develop our crap because we want to make it. You know, we love to make it. I love that process. That's what I spend most of my time doing is the product development.
And it's maintaining, like we were saying earlier, that art protecting art. When each one is individually handcrafted to fit an instrument, it's totally different than if they're rolling off the assembly line, even at a rate of 50 a day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, ours is more like
quality just
ours
drops.
Is more like 4 to 5 a day. You know, if we're lucky.
And it's not just that. Like you were saying with testing, like I myself own Austin Hot Mods. And I do modifications and provide modification kits for close to 50 different guitar pedals. That's a lot of pedals. Now,
that's a lot to keep track of.
That's
the differences, yeah.
That's a lot of pedals that I had to buy.
You know, I need to get you a pedal box, man.
or at the least, go out and buy a used version of it, and maybe a couple of them, because I'm Frankensteining pedals here. I could very well burn out the main chip, all kinds of stuff when you're experimenting with electronics. So people ask me, like, hey, can you do, I've seen this mod, can you do this, 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 and this to my pedal? And I'm like, no, because I've never done that, and I refuse to make your pedal into Frankenstein. I will not. Like, if three other people ask me for that mod this year, I will absolutely go out and buy one of those pedals and start tinkering.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this break point.
Yeah.
It's the squeaky wheel gets the grease stuff, yeah, you know, like that whole thing.
And it's good to hear that y'all kind of operate under that same model. Because, I mean, good Lord, like we're saying, it's not like most cases, and don't get me wrong, I've got SKB cases for both my electronics as well as my instruments. But... Mm-hmm. When you're looking at their website, folks, which is CaltonCases.com, you've got electric guitars, acoustic guitars, bass guitars, archtops, banjos, mandolins, bouzoukis, citterns, ukuleles, violins, violas, mandocellos, short mandolas, long mandolas. And then each one of those categories has a minimum of 10 brand names in it.
Yeah.
So we have, you're talking over 100 models that you guys provide.
We'll do whatever someone has. It's just those are the ones that there are some listed there that we don't have templates for yet. But we have, we have over 1,000 templates in our shop right now. And we started when we started with what Keith sent us. He sent us about 20. And he was like, these are the ones you're probably going to need the most of.
Yeah.
And every week we get new. So when you order a case from us, if we don't have the template, we request for you to fill out a measurement form and do a tracing. And that I fully understand is a pain in the ass.
It is.
Some people love it because it connects them with their instrument. And we hear that sometimes.
And with their case.
They're like, oh, man, I really enjoyed it because I didn't realize that it is different than these other instruments. And some of them have to contact the builder, and then they have a whole other relationship with the builder because of the measurements or whatever. But it's a pain in the butt. But it's the same as, you know, if you order a suit online to what you think your sizes are, if you go in and get measured, you know, it
That's
takes a
right.
little time to get
That's
measured.
Right.
And it's the quality of what we're trying to provide. And there's nothing worse than someone getting a case and it doesn't fit right. And they have to send it back to us. Like, that's just disappointment for everybody.
Yeah.
But whenever we get those measurements in, we actually just posted a video recently online that on YouTube, and then we also put it on our Instagram and Facebook of how we do that, like how we take the measurement form, we turn it into a digital tracing, and then we cut that on our CNC, and then we use that every step of the process in the build. And there's about, you know, I just checked it yesterday. Last week we were averaging 15 hours per build per instrument case. So it's a ton of time that we spend building each case. And that's actual labor. That's not just the time that it goes to the shop, because we have four or five spots that where stuff has to dry, you know, for a day and then go through. But that's hands on the case, 15 hours, which there's not a lot of things that are being built by hand in this size these days that, you know, have that much time. And obviously custom guitars and custom instruments can have months and months and months of time.
Yeah.
But
precisely.
That's about as streamlined as we can get, you know, with our build.
Well, but that's just it though. I mean, and that's really the market that y'all are going for. Y'all aren't going for your musician's friend musician. You know, there's another 71 companies out there, making cases and cheaper versions of them. That's not a market that you want to get into, but once you start finding those musicians that, are the serious touring musician, are the serious touring studio musician, traveling around with $8,000 handmade guitars, you're darn tootin' they're going to have a case that costs $1,000 to properly protect their instrument, to have a guarantee with it. And even the one thing that I really love is the fact that the flat side of the case actively has rubber feet.
So it doesn't really slide around.
It doesn't scratch up, like, the and man like the The finishes are gorgeous. I'm sitting here looking at the bass guitar hard case picture right now, and it's like, it looks like a race car.
Oh, man. I'm a product of, you know, the 70s, 80s myself. Man. And I'm, you remember the,
that,
you know, the motorcycle
sparkle
helmet,
is
the
just,
bowling balls, the
yeah,
bass boats,
exactly.
You know, that whole thing. We started doing some sparkles. So Granite and splatter used to be a big deal for Al. And Keith didn't really enjoy doing the splatter too much. And I don't know if Keith ever did the granite, but
I do like the pollock look.
He probably must have.
The one that you'll have in your video that's kind of a pollock splatter paint style.
Yeah.
That's really cool too. But man, this one, it's like huffy brown, you know? Like
it looks like
your uncle's El Camino. Like
the glitter, I tell you, man, the
it's
glitter
great.
We just kind of on a whim, we were like, let's try some glitter in it. And we had some holographic flake, and that was year one. We were experimenting with it. And year one for us was 2012, I think. Yeah.
Wow.
And John and I built like the first 100 ourselves, you know, in the shop. But anyway, so we started experimenting a little bit with glitter, and we were like, that's badass. But already at that point, Keith was only doing textured cases. Now, Al was doing cases that were pretty smooth. And we had a couple molds that were close to smooth. And the problem with a smooth case was, you know, a solid color smooth case, before it even got out of the shop, it had scratches on it. Like, you could just, we were working on carpeted tables. And like, we had carpet everywhere to try to protect the cases from getting any kind of damage at all. And there was, you know, you have 15 or plus hours in the case, and it gets down to the inspection point, and there's two scratches on it, and you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So disappointing. So disappointing. So we really kind of embraced, all right, well, texture is really the way to go, and it just doesn't scratch as easy. And of course, we're clean freaks about the surfaces that we work on. But so we've just avoided the smooth stuff for a while, but we were doing glitter. And then last year for NAMM, when we were making the new violin case, which we had worked on for a year in prototypes, or I'll say fiddle case for most of our market.
Mm.
And I was like, man, I just want to see one of the sample boards in smooth. And we did a smooth glitter, and it was just night and day. So it just popped, you know, so much, as you would expect. You know, smooth clear with glitter is going to be way, way brighter. So we made the decision, like, okay, we'll do smooth cases, but we will only do them if they're glitter. Like, we won't do smooth solid colors or anything like that.
Yeah.
But you have the option to do a smooth glitter. And we just finished updating basically our whole line so that we have a smooth case available for just about everything. We don't have a smooth banjo yet mandocello, but we have almost everything else, like the electric. Oh, man, and the electric looks so good smooth. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah,
so we really hope that, and people are eating it up. I mean, we started with like 7 glitters, and now we have 21 glitters, I think,
because people
just love them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's fun is like customizing. We posted a picture the other day that someone had sent us, an artist had sent us, and it was like they had their silver sparkle boots on, and they had their silver sparkle case, and it just was like, I was like, man, that's it right there. Expression, you know, like customize it to you, you know?
Yep.
So it, and I don't know if there was a silver sparkle guitar in there, but there probably was, you know, but it's pretty fun.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about some of the technology that you guys are using. Because one of the great stats that y'all have, is the humidity level that y'all are able to maintain on the interior for at least 3 days.
Yeah,
72 hours of humidity retention, which is incredible for those of you out there who are like me and carry a cigar humidor in your acoustic case.
Right.
You know,
and that's
a little
still
meter.
You know, it's it works, you know, those little humidity packs or whatever.
Well, I've just got like a little digital, like what you put in your cigar humidor that reads the temperature and humidity, you know?
Yeah.
It costs like $2.
You have the Bluetooth one, so it like tells you if something's going wrong.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, no, I haven't gotten that hardcore.
Yeah, some people, I mean, you would be amazed the instruments that we see come through. Sometimes people will just bring us instruments because they want us to measure it. And if they're coming into town or if they're local, and we gladly welcome anybody to come by the shop and give them a tour and sit down and talk to them, because we also love to hear the stories about their $40,000 mandolin or something, you know.
Yeah.
What the hell? Where did that come from? And it was like, you know, some famous person, of
course.
Yeah,
your Stradivari violin.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we decided to do this violin case because we have typically just been mostly, you know, rock and roll, folk, country. That's who knows about Kalten cases. And we really, that's one of the reasons we made the electric guitar case, was really to push more into the electric market and more in the,
sure,
in the rock and maybe harder rock market. And because they weren't so aware of Kalten cases existing. But the orchestral market is something that they just, I don't think they had ever even heard of Kalten. They certainly know BAM and a few other case makers. But so we spent a good year working on the design, the shape, and, you know, the bow holders and all that stuff. Mm. And then we were shopping it around, just kind of sending cases around to some of these, you know, high-end violin shops. And they're all like, well, what are the specs on it? And we're like, I don't know. You know, it's really tough. You know, that's what we know. It's a really tough case. And they're like,
we lit it on fire in a video. What more do you want, dude?
Yeah. And of course,
we ran over it with two trucks.
Yeah. You can imagine. They're like, whoa, no. We never do that with a violin. It's like, well, we know. We're not saying to do this, but, you know, you could.
If it happens, it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have a little disclaimer at the beginning. Please don't do this with your own instrument.
Do not attempt.
But we would put an instrument in our violin case and go to a shop, and then we'd jump up and down on it in front of them. Like, we'd say, here's the violin in this case.
Yeah.
And then we'd lay it down, and we'd jump up and down, and they're like, oh, my gosh, what are you doing? But we're like, that's how tough it is. We're really, you know, we're really strong.
Yeah.
So we decided we needed to get some validation, and we sent out seven cases. And I think three violins to a third party, you know, neutral testing facility. I think they're in North Carolina.
Mm.
And we ran a series of tests, drop test, impact test, puncture test, latch impact test, humidity test, pressure test, you know, temperature test, all this. And the very last test was burn it to the ground. They built a mock apartment. And we put two cases in the mock apartment, and they tied one to a like a wire rope, and they lit the whole damn thing on fire.
Nice.
It was really cool. Yeah, there's a video. We got to post that video, Dan.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, so our cases are not fireproof, you know, but they are. I mean, they're going to provide some protection, some thermal protection anyway.
Sure.
So they let the apartment burn, and then they pulled out one of them at the average time. There's supposedly some national average that the fire department puts out a house fire or something.
Sure.
And then the other one, they just let it burn out. And then they sent us back both cases and with a bunch of specs on it. We haven't fully analyzed those specs, but believe me, they burned and, you know, looked pretty rough. But all the other tests, which is amazing, all the other tests really came back with some amazing data. Like, the case can take 1,100 pounds of pressure before it fails.
Wow.
Now, it starts to, like, you know, groan and stress and, you know, buckle a little bit here and there at around 800, but it doesn't fail until 1,100 pounds. And we were like, that's a hell of a lot of
weight.
That's
a whole lot.
I don't think anything that, like, people call our cases shaped cases because they're shaped like an instrument.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty confident there's not a shaped case out there that comes anywhere close to that.
No.
Like, I mean, maybe Hoffy's carbon case, but we're going to test that, you know?
Yeah.
And see, and I would say probably not, because it's strong, but it's not as thick, and everybody knows epoxy and carbon are just more brittle. So when they break, they explode, you know, or stress fracture everywhere.
Well,
fiberglass is just a denser material. It can take an impact. It's designed to take an impact.
Yes. But that's the thing. Let's get into that for just a moment, because, of course, that's going to be everybody's first go-to is, well, you know, carbon fiber is a whole lot stronger. Yes and no. It definitely is a whole lot more flexible for things.
Carbon fiber. Yeah, carbon fiber is stiffer. Like, that's really the way to put it. It is a stiffer product. And by its weight, it is definitely harder and stronger.
Yeah.
But the strength-to-weight ratio is really close in fiberglass. But fiberglass, it was designed, back in the 50s, to basically, you know, build boats and big storage tanks and
cars.
And they started using it in vehicles and airplanes.
Corvettes.
And it was, yeah. Oh, yeah, man. I got to work on a couple of Corvette bodies. That was awesome. But, yeah, it's designed to take repeated impact and not fail. Like, you know, you've heard of, like, material fatigue.
Yeah.
Like, fiberglass has, like, a super high material fatigue threshold. Carbon fiber doesn't, because it's really stiff. Like, you've seen, you know, the auto races, and when there's a wreck, the car just literally explodes into pieces. And that's unfortunately, you know, carbon fiber is just very brittle. So it's a very pretty material, but once it starts to go, it goes. Like, it just cracks like glass, you know, and that's
yeah,
the thing.
That's just it. The fissure line follows pretty rapidly. And as opposed to fiberglass, which is, by its definition there and by its name, it's literally pieces of spun glass that are compressed together with resin. In layers.
Yeah, and it's a polyester resin that we use.
It's a really incredible process that, like you're saying, yields amazing results when it comes to the durability and tensile strength.
Yeah. It's just designed to take abuse, you know, and just keep going. It really is. Like, it's so rare that we ever see a crack even in old cases. Like, we'll see chips in the gel coat in the old cases with the hard corners.
Yep.
But it's just, you know, the cases themselves don't fail. It's really the hardware that gets, like, a direct hit. But, you know, we have those catch surrounds around them now, and that was Keith's design as well. And we get asked for repairs, and it's always an old case that they want, like, new trim and new hardware on, and it's a 20 or 30-year-old case. And we gladly do it because, you know, it's fun to get those old cases in and photograph them and stuff and hear the history on them. And you know, we always say, well, would you rather have a new case? And they're like, no way, man. That's got, like, that's my legacy. It's got a sticker from everywhere I've been and all that other stuff. And, you know, that's part of it. That, imagine these, you know, pressed fiber cases, these pressed board, basically cardboard type cases that every guitar comes in, and it's basically a free case. You know, I don't know, those cost $50 to produce at the most. Yeah. And they last one. If you're on tour, you're lucky to get a season out of those. But if you're on tour, you're slapping stickers on it, you know, and you're doing things, and then it falls apart in a year. Man, that sucks, because are you going to carry that case around for the rest of your life so you can remember the tour? You know, I've got Jerry Jeff Walker's case sitting in my office right now.
Nice.
Because he's passing it down to his son, Django. And I asked him, and this is the second time it's been in, because he didn't want the catch surrounds on it the first time, and this time he does. But it's an old case, and it's got the Saxon Pub sticker on it, Saxon Hatter, Guns N' Oil. There's some surf stickers on it. There's all kinds of cool stickers all over it. And, you know, that's part of it. It's the story, you know, it's character. And if the case can't survive, you know, 20, 30 years, then
was it worth the money?
The instrument. Yeah. And the instrument that's going in this is a, I just forgot. Eric Clapton, you know, it's an Eric Clapton Dread that goes in this thing, or 00. And it's, you know, $20,000 guitar or something that goes in there.
Yeah.
But it's being passed down. That's really what it's about. You know, it's this legacy.
Exactly.
The an original case for the instrument always has, you know, more value. But, you know, can you actually use the original case, you know, to travel around with? You know, that's a good point. Like, now we have a lot of luthiers, a lot of these boutique luthiers, like Ryan guitars and Bourgeois in them now. And well, I mean,
even here in Austin, I was going to say, like right up the road, we've got Collings. You know, we've got a few electric guitar makers. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's a really awesome thing when they say they want their instrument, like their instrument deserves to be in this case, and it deserves to be the original case because they see it as like it's their art, and I want it protected all the way to the customer. What he does with it or she does with it after that, whatever, it's their deal, but it's going to get there safely. Yeah. And it's so cool that there's so many instruments going out that the Calton is an original case now.
That's great.
Just makes me so proud, you know?
Yeah, man.
And we brand them on our label. Like we take, there's like a 2x6 or 2x5 black and silver label that we have on there, but we give them, any luthier that's using us, we give them all the branding space on that label, and we move our logo like way down the bottom right corner, a little bitty.
That's great.
So the case is, you know, their case, really.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Yeah.
And, you know, back to that testing stuff, I wanted to tell you a little bit more about that because you had asked specifically about temperature and stuff, and I deviated. I'm sorry about that.
It's hard not to.
But the humidity, So it has. The Calton trim that goes around it is a little bit bigger than most people's trim, and that is also by Keith's design. Like he designed the dies that extrude that trim, and we have it extruded in Houston at Texas Extrusion. And it's a deeper kind of seat, like a tongue and groove seat, than most people have. And because of that, it really holds the atmosphere within the case really well.
Yeah.
So, you know, basically instruments like, you know, 40 to 50% humidity, that's a nice stable humidity. So if you can achieve that humidity, and most people's houses are basically, you know, that's the environment that you're kind of living in that's comfortable. So if that's the humidity that your case has been open in, then it'll kind of, it'll neutralize, you know, basically grab that atmospheric condition. And when you close that case up, it'll stay like that for at least 3 days. We actually had, that was the shortest test. We had some that went 5 and 6 days, but we had to use, you know, the shortest
run.
That's
incredible.
And that's the kind of thing, like, if you, you know, you leave your instrument at home, you know, you go out of town for a weekend, and then there's, like, you know, thunderstorms like crazy, and the humidity is off the charts, or the opposite, there's a dry spell that comes through, and you've got a 20 or 30, even a $5,000 instrument. You know, all those other cases, they just, the atmosphere just transfers in so quickly.
Yeah.
So it's nice to think that, you know, it's protected in that situation a little bit better. Like those humidifier packs, we did a, Tony Polcaster did a review of our cases not too long ago, and he just basically, he put it like, there's a certain type of humidifier pack that he uses that he throws into all of his cases. And he's like, in these cases over here, I have to change it every week. In the Calton cases, I change it once a month. And it's like, that's great. You know, it saves you money, but it also is a testament to kind of what we're saying. Yeah. And he's just like, I just noticed that they just last a lot longer in the Calton case because it's sealed up pretty nice, you know?
Yeah.
And then the same goes for temperature. We have, so it takes about 90 minutes to transfer, you know, an outside temperature to inside the case. So we've had lots of stories where people were, you know, their guitar was in their trunk and, you know, they went into a diner and they forgot about it, or it was in the van and it was sitting in the sun and they're like, oh shit, you know, and they ran out and it was fine, you know, and everything was fine. Because what you're trying to do with instruments in general, whether they're valuable or not, you protect them from temperature shock, you know, any rapid changes in temperature, like you go set your guitar in the trunk without a case and close it. And you're probably, something's going to warp and crack.
You are going to destroy an instrument, or at least the way it sounds.
Yeah. So 90 minutes is a pretty long curve for the temperature, you know, differential or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I wish it was longer than that, but that's really good compared to almost every case. Like these, really the worst thing you can do is have a black box, you know. Yeah. Because that's going to absorb, like a black injection molded thermoplastic has almost no insulating property at all.
Oh, no.
And you're Yeah, you're relying on whatever foam's in there. And the mass-produced cases, they are value engineering down to the cheapest foam that they can use.
Yeah.
And we use a high-density urethane, basically an upholstery foam, but it's a really good quality soft foam. We use a slightly heavy density of foam for our solid bodies or for the banjos just to take the weight of the instrument potentially moving or something.
Mm.
But that foam has really great insulating properties. It's basically like the foam you use in a Yeti cooler. It's a urethane foam, not a styrene.
Exactly.
So, and urethane is just way more insulating.
Yep.
The if I remember right, because I used to spray urethane in the prop world, I had a foam spraying rig.
Oh, nice.
And I think it was an R11 per inch of that foam, which was pretty good, you know. So if you needed to insulate a wall, you know, you put a couple of inches of this spray foam in there.
Yep.
Versus an R17 being, you know, 3.5 or 5 inches, you know, of some fiberglass spun new material. But tech. Sorry, man.
No. But that's just it. It really does come down to, because I've got an SKB case out in the garage that, good God, I got maybe like a year after I bought my guitar. I've had my acoustic guitar for 20-something years. It's my baby. Really the only one that I own that I play. I own a 12-string that somebody gave me. Aside from that, I own a classical. But when it comes to my acoustic, that's the only one I got. And it's the only one I play. And sadly, the case the plastic is horribly thin. I mean, maybe the thickness of 2 credit cards.
Yeah.
And this is like your average SKB wide body dreadnought case, you know, go out and pick it up at any local music shop for $89 to $100.
Sure. Yeah.
And
throw a couple t-shirts in or a towel to make sure it's holding it tight. You know, a lot
that it actually holds it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's all right, but you know, and in the garage, it's probably, you know, it's not the best, but it's the temperature shock thing, really. It's not that the instrument can't take a high or a low temperature. It's that you want it to be as gradual as you can.
Yeah.
Like I tell people, if they really do ask about it, I say, look, if you're traveling with your case, then when you get to the hotel room, like the worst thing you do is just open it up right when you get there.
Yeah.
Like, man, if you can just let the instrument sit in the case, if you can sit there for about an hour, just to make sure that it's acclimated to all those extreme changes in temperature and climate, before you open it up, that's a nice way to kind of treat your baby, you know?
That's right.
And it helps. And it's certainly the you know, the opposite is true. Like close it up and get it inside that case, you know, in a nice conditioned environment. Like if you take it outside and you're playing it on your back porch and it's a really dry day and you're about to head to the airport, it's better to get it, you know, get it in the house, let it cool down, let the case cool down, let it absorb whatever the atmosphere is. Right there, the comfortable atmosphere, close it up, you know, a good hour or two before you head out to kind of, you know, get it ready for that trip.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you want those things to last. And here's the other part of, and I hate to try to sell cases. I love what we do. I love the creativity of it. I love being in this world and in this family of music and all the accessories to it, because we're just an accessory as well.
Yeah.
But, oh, shoot, man. I just did the old man thing. I totally forgot where I was going with that.
Well, I'll use that as an opportunity to say this in regards to, number one, in my defense, I worded that wrongly. My case is in the garage. The guitar is not in the case.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
I would never do that.
You would be the first to leave it in the garage.
Exactly.
Or the attic.
Oh, God, that's the Texas one right there. Look at this beautiful guitar I found in my attic. Yeah, I'm not buying that. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I was going to say. I remember now. See, you just had to like change the subject for a second. No, I was going to say that part of the value of the case is like it does protect it, because when an instrument gets damaged, if it's a valuable instrument, it can take, well, for one, it can be expensive. That it can literally take months and months and months of waiting for, you know, like a good repair, you know, a good repair tech is got a line, you know, and it can take 3 to 6 months sometimes to get your instrument back, and you don't want to be away from it. And then you're shipping it again, usually, to someone, you know? So you're exposing it 2 more times without your, you know, without it being in your hand to potential damage.
Well,
so it's
to
just better, you know, it's
an
insurance
like
policy.
That.
Yeah. So thanks for letting me bring it back around.
No, absolutely. Quite
a salesman, but
quite literally my job. You know. And you know,
yeah.
I was going to say, I want to use that opportunity that you were saying to acclimate things, that kind of stuff. As an audio engineer and former live venue engineer, that's why you need to show up before your gig. Musicians,
exactly.
So that you're not driving your guitar through 100-degree heat, getting it into an air-conditioned club, and then opening up the case and playing 15 minutes later and going, man, my intonation's off. You think?
Yeah, duh.
You think?
Yeah, exactly.
You think your intonation's off? I wonder why. That's a big reason behind it. Not having a case that, and like I said, you can go on to Amazon and buy like a 5-pack of little humidity detectors. You know, they're little battery operated digital readout. Just pop it right in there where you keep your strings and your picks. You know, and every once in a while, just open it up and check it. You know, and you'd be surprised what the humidity level could be and what environment you are actually keeping you're living in, quite literally. Because when you're a musician, when you're out there, when you're touring, that's no different than me and my soundboard. You know, I would nowhere in the world go out with my audio equipment or my video equipment, things like that, in a cheap case.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't happen. If it's not
and
a proper
just, yeah. one drop, and I mean, how much? Yeah. I mean, how much pain and suffering are you going to live through whenever you drop something and break it?
Well, precisely, and it really is the fact of once you start stepping into that world of different realm of technology, different realm of instrument that you're playing with, that's where this level of case comes in. And like we were saying earlier, that's really the target market that you're at, is the concert musician, the touring professional, people traveling around the country to do studio sessions, things like that.
Yeah. We have a lot of collectors too, which is interesting. A lot of people, you know, they just invest in instruments, and, I mean, I know collectors that don't even play, and they have, you know, 20 or 30.
Oh, sure.
You know, they'll have a couple $100,000 worth of instruments, and they see it as, you know, a really solid investment. And they're right, you know, if they're buying from these builders. And, you know, most builders, you know, they gradually move up, and they hover at just under $2,000 for quite a while. But once they've kind of dialed in their craft, a lot of them jump to 5,000 really quickly, the 3,500, then 5,000.
Absolutely.
And actually, that's where we find a lot of interest from our partners and luthiers. Like, I prefer to work with the luthiers, the guitar builders, or the instrument builders, than the retail shops, because the retail shop is an accessory to them. Like, they're selling it.
Yeah.
They're selling a case.
It really is.
The luthiers
are like,
I want it to get there safely. It's part of the whole package. It's color matched their instrument sometimes. It's got their name on it and stuff. And they, you know, it just feels like a better union. Now, we do have some amazing retail partners, and we would not be around without them. You know, Carter Vintage and Acoustic Music Works. And we have about 150 partners.
Wow.
That half of them are retailers, retail shops, boutique shops. And half of them are luthiers and builders.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because, you know, as someone who's worked in the retail side, been very good friends with that side for many years, it is the fact that, you know, I mean, even one of my friends has a Gibson Les Paul Custom, you know, that's like when he got to the point in his life where that was something that he could do for himself. And he was out playing regularly. Yeah, man, like that was the first thing that he went out and got. And to know that you go out and spend like $3,500, $4,000 on that, that's not exactly the instrument that is hanging on the wall in your local guitar mm-hmm. center. If it is, it's the one that takes the 10-foot ladder to go get.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not reaching it. It's way up top. They're going to go get the manager to come bring it down for you. And they've mainly got, they maybe got two or three in the back. Maybe.
Yeah, ask to touch.
Yeah. Exactly.
For sure, yeah.
Exactly.
Which actually reminds me, shout out to the locals, Austin Vintage and South Austin.
Oh, yeah.
Music, who've been taking care of us for a long time, too.
Well, yeah, precisely. And it is that boutique musician. It is those people that are out there buying your Reverend guitars, things like that, buying from small manufacturers where things are custom made to fit you, where a standard case just isn't going to protect that investment.
Yeah. We are finding, you know, it's really cool when the artists themselves reach out to us and they want that they're reaching out because and I love it when they say it. They're like, I've been saving it up for a long time. I've wanted one for a long time, and I'm going to get one now.
Nice.
And that's so cool. I mean, I'm really lucky to be the steward of this, you know, of this brand now. And, we were talking earlier, like, yeah, I was in the film industry and I did all these museum exhibits, and that was really cool and really fun. And, you know, of course, tons of egos in both of those worlds, but,
sure.
But there's just something so, I don't know, just so warm and rich about this brand and this the story behind this company and the team that we put together. And, you know, we rotate people in and out because, like I say, Carney types, you know, this town is full of drifting musicians and artists. And it's really cool that they can call this place home for a couple of years and they become a part of the family, you know, forever. But it felt like a really good move, like home, you know, like I couldn't see doing anything else with my experiences. Like I definitely couldn't have kept burning it at both ends in the film industry. You know, you'll just kill yourself. But, well, and the museum industry is nice, but it's a different pace, you know? And I love the idea of this hand-built product, you know, in a town that appreciates hand-built, you know, still. Yep.
Well, and, you know, I can definitely appreciate where you're coming from. I began my career as a technician building and designing sets for theater.
Things
man, like that.
We did cross paths.
Most definitely, man. Like Stratford Playhouse, Tim Driscoll, all the way, son.
I know like, that name.
We were up there with Theater Under the Stars annually, ranked as one of the best theaters in Texas annually in those days.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Man.
And to go from that, and the concept, because, you know, there's the strike at the end of the show. Like, there may be some generalized set pieces. Like, hey, that was some really nice rolling trees that you made. Let's keep those up in the loft. So when we need some, we got some rolling trees. Aside from that, like, the mansion from Annie, we didn't keep that, dude. That got destroyed at the end of the show.
And most stuff does get, I mean, that was the difference in those two worlds for me. The museum world was really, like, everything was close inspection, you know, from 2 inches away, people would stare at it and, you know, try to understand if it was real or fake.
Yeah.
And I got really good at faking all kinds of crazy stuff. And in the museum, I mean, in the movie world, it was like, how far away is the camera? You know, is it a 50-foot shot?
Yeah, can we?
Shot? How big is it going to be? You know? But then everything went digital, and it ruined that for me.
Oh, yeah,
everything was in focus all the time.
Well, and it's like I told people whenever I moved back home from Maine and started back, like, filming and editing weddings just to make pickup cash while I was getting my business on the ground. Everybody wanted to be filmed in HD, and I was like, are you going to have, like, an airbrush makeup artist there?
You're not going to like it.
Because if not, you really ain't going to like, you're going to have a professional hairdresser. And like, because you get any loose thread on that dress, we're going to see it. Like, if you got to run in that
After
satin, you're going to see it.
yeah.
And
yeah, I know that the editors, you know, the After Effects guys really started making some money when everything went HD.
Oh yeah,
there it was just like, wow, it's why like, is this so ugly? Why does everything look like a soap opera? You know, that's what everything started to look like, a soap opera.
Well,
like,
yeah, man. And it really is that concept of, even in the corporate world that I work in now, where millions of dollars are spent on an event, it's never looking like that again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you better capture it.
And to go to the opposite side of the coin, and even for me as someone who modifies pedals, like, I got people sometimes that send me, like, one of the mods I do is to vintage Russian Big Muffs, you know? Those things go for, like, hundreds and hundreds of dollars now. They weren't cheap when they came out. They're very hard and very rare to find now. So that takes a pretty big level of trust to send something to somebody and go, hey, take the parts out of this and replace it.
Yeah.
You know, and make my vintage accessory sound better.
Yeah. You making like new boards and everything for the stuff?
No. It's part swaps, things like that.
Yeah. Man, very cool. And I want to come dig through your scrap pile.
Oh, anytime, bud. We're apparently right up the road from each other from what I see on the map. So I'm right down in South Austin. You're right. You guys are located right up on 4th Street. How long has the facility been over there?
We've been here about 3 years. In October, it'll be 3 years. Yeah. And we, we started, I had a shop over kind of northeast, in my backyard where I was building museum exhibit stuff, and we were between jobs whenever John Green showed up, and we started making cases there, and we were there for about a year. That was up at I call it Rogie Lane in Springdale, and near 51st. And then the shop moved, you know, so we've been in Texas for about 9 years now, and it moved 5 times. So Kelton, I mean, we have really struggled, you know, we have really struggled like all small businesses do. And you would kind of think, you know, inheriting a small business that has already been around for 40 something years, that you could just kind of walk right into it. But it had gone through a pretty bumpy period in a previous exchange of ownership.
Sure.
And, you know, it doesn't take much digging to find, you know, some people that were pretty upset about what happened with Calton, but basically some guy bought it from the guy up in Canada who was running Al, and then he tanked it. He took a bunch of deposits from people, which we never did before. And on Al's good relationships with everyone, they trusted that this guy was going to do the right thing. And then he just ran with the money and never filled the orders. Best we can tell, it was about 200 orders. Cause we have personally filled over 100 of those whenever anybody calls and says, I got screwed over by you guys. It's like, well, when was that? And if they say,
yeah,
you know,
when was that? Show me the paperwork and we'll set you up.
Yeah. If they've got, they can give me any kind of confirmation email or any kind of communication, then we back it up, you know, but
it is also
important for us to say, hey man, that's not us. It is the same brand, but this guy screwed everybody over. And that guy really screwed over Al and Keith in a big way. You know,
that's like saying you have a leaky mid-80s Harley, though. Of course you do. You bought a Harley in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
They were all leaking oil.
Exactly. You know? I got an old Land Cruiser.
And
I can
that's
tell
just
where I
it, though. Legacy companies like Calton that have been around this long in this industry, providing such a specialized thing, like you're saying, they exchange hands, they marry with people, they divorce from people, business wise, company wise, that kind of stuff. And to know that the vision has come back.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that it was, to know that the demand on quality and the delivering to the client and the customer have come back is really, really a great thing to hear, Jeff, from such a fantastic company. Because it's great to know that companies like Calton stay small. Because once you start with mass production, there is no going back. There's no going back. To go back makes zero sense at that point. And you are no longer making a boutique custom product. You're just not. You can't claim that you are. You are mass producing things. So we
had some great conversations with, we go to NAMM.
Sure.
And it's a hard show to do for a small company because it is expensive and all that. But,
oh, yeah.
But it's good to, it's your only chance to really meet a lot of the people that are in the network because everybody else is working so hard the rest of the year, But Tom from TKL, the owner of TKL, which is a massive, case company in the States, and they make everybody's cases, everybody's OEM cases. And he has been so generous and so kind to us over the years. He stopped in a couple times when he was in Austin and came by and, gave me some pointers, gave me some, some inventory efficiency pointers, and
ooh,
we've shared thoughts and ideas over the years. And we had a conversation, during this whole COVID thing, obviously it's been a shock to everybody's system.
Oh yeah.
But I really didn't know if we were going to make it because our sales immediately dropped to 30% of what they normally were.
Oh,
and
wow.
we were hoping for growth, in this 12-month cycle. We were hoping for maybe not doubling sales, but we were certainly looking at a lot of growth because we had put so much effort into kind of rebuilding the brand and working on some marketing, social media, and image, and also website. We put a ton of effort into the website, which is really complicated because it's a custom website to build a custom case. So it's pretty tricky.
No, but, those website is like, I do web design and all our network design, all the websites, things like that I've built. And y'all's website is absolutely phenomenal. It is amazing. It is interactive.
Thank you.
It's everything that you want in a website as far as how fast it loads, how interactive it is. It is beautifully done. So,
well, the version from last year was a lot slower, but it was we called it 3.0 and this is 3.1 right now. And the only thing left to do to it, we're writing articles every, a couple a month, which is helping to build up our blog.
Sure.
And if anybody's interested, there's Instrument Care blog in there. We're having a carbon fiberglass versus carbon in there. We're going to add our engineering test in there.
Yeah.
We're doing, we actually have artist endorsers now, and we've never had that before.
That's great.
Keith and Al both said, don't give anything to artists. Just don't. They'll never stop asking. But we just decided it's a different day and age. You have to, you have to be an active part of the social world.
Yeah.
And that's the way to do it. So we have about 6 artists right now, and we're signing some
more.
That's
great.
Anyway, blah, blah, blah. But what we don't have yet is the color shifting option as you're building your order, which we are working on. So anybody that goes to it and says, well, it would be great if you could see the color on the case as I'm choosing it, we're working on it. It's just a really deep database.
That's a hard database protocol to pull up.
We literally have to imagine – because 15 cases, we have 15 solid colors. We have granite, we have splatter, we have heavy splatter, we have 17 or 21 glitters, and then 9 interior colors. That adds up to, we've all done the math several times. It's either several million or several hundred thousand options. And we have the option of trying to build as many of those cases as we could and take photos to use as photo swaps, or to literally go in and we've photographed every material surface really well. And we're having to go in and basically hand paint those, in Photoshop or something into every version of it.
That's just it. The permutations have to be into literally the couple few thousand, because like we said earlier, you have over 100 styles of case over 100 manufacturers that you make cases for and styles of guitar. In addition to that, the textured options that are there and the surface type. And then in addition to that, the colors, the cutaway option or not cutaway option. It just keeps going. It is literally a rabbit hole of options for your cases. It's so great.
If people ask me why I have no hair, man, I just I pull it out daily.
Hey, because your brain is too huge, Jeff. That's why. Your brain is filled with case ideas, and there's no room for the roots. That's what you need to tell
speaking
them.
Speaking of case ideas.
Go ahead.
We're building the double Mando case, but there used to be a double Mando case that Keith did, and he didn't send us that mold. He's like, it's just a box. We built a pedal box a few years ago for Pedal Train, and then they discontinued the line that we were building it for. So we were like, oh, well, whatever. We're not going to make these, I guess. But we did make an amp out of one the other day, and it turned out really cool. So we sent out two more boxes to our buddy out in California, Satellite Amps, to make a couple amps and see, you know, if this is something we'll add to our line with the pedal board boxes. But the double Mando box we're making, we made it big enough so that it could be a big pedal board box. It's basically 2 foot by 3 foot. Or it can be a gear box, or it can be a steel box, or it can be a whole host of other stuff. I mean, to me, I'm kind of like, dude, if I've got a blue sparkle, you know, fender case, and then I want my blue sparkle, you know, the rest of my gearbox and my pedalboard box to match. So I can go, those two blue ones over there are mine, you know, like that's it. And they match and I look like a badass.
Yeah.
So when I get one made, since you're local, I'll call you up and say, here, you know, take one of these and see what you can do with it. You know?
Oh, absolutely. And,
you know, it could come in handy. I have no idea, but we're trying.
Most definitely. And that's just it. It's about finding new markets, especially right now in the age of COVID. It is about flexing your muscles in as many different ways as possible. Really trying to leverage the market that you're already in, leverage the materials that you already have, and try and provide for as much a range as possible so that you can build the brand in different ways. You know, like you're saying, to be able to provide, like right now, the 1 to 5 watt head for guitar amps is like the lunchbox head is just the jam. It's what everybody's about. Mm-hmm. So to provide proper cases for those, you know, things like that are fantastic. So to know that you guys are looking forward, that you're playing around with new ideas and trying to innovate in a literally a field that can be so stagnant with design and what it's doing and the aesthetic of what's going on. And the fact that your case makes as much of an impact visually as the instrument inside is absolutely amazing. It is really good. So
that's cool, man.
Well, definitely. It's one of those that when you've worked in the industry long enough and you've worked stages long enough, you see a lot of things. But like I said, when somebody came up on stage with one of those, it was always like, ooh, what's inside that?
Ooh. Yeah, exactly.
What'd he bring with him tonight?
People are like, what's in there?
Exactly.
You know, you go to the airport, and people are like, what's in there? You know, that's just part of the fun. I mean, you know, when you have something nice, you either like to show it off, but it is nice for it to be recognized that you have it, you know, and you get some bragging rights with it. It's always fun to sit it down and open it up, you know, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
We need you to write us some copy, man. You're a wordsmith.
I'll write some copy. We can talk. We won't talk on air, but we can talk.
Well, we definitely have to have a beer soon.
Most definitely. Most definitely. We need to throw a couple down. And because since we've been chatting, I've been over here jotting things down. Just ideas, because it's like, ooh, yeah, you know, and I'll talk to you about it off air, because I don't want to put it out there and then have somebody steal the idea from you. Or me.
Well, we can move pretty fast on ideas, you know, because like I say, we don't send stuff out. We try to do it all in-house.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and that's something I've learned over 30 years, like anything that you send out to get somebody else to do, it generally takes longer, and it's nine, you know, if you're lucky, it's 99% of what you wanted. Yeah. But if it, you know, there's 50 little pieces to our case, and it's just so frustrating. Like, literally, we were playing around with some brass hardware on a case because we've been wanting to see what it would look like with a certain color and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And
antique brass would look great.
Yeah, and, you know, no big deal, right? And people have been doing brass hardware forever, but Calton's always just done nickel-plated, you know, steel. Mm. And polished chrome, basically, look. And so we've been looking at some black hardware as well. But I was like, well, let's just send some of our hardware, rather than try to find it, let's just send some out and have it brass-plated. But they wouldn't plate the rivets. So I was like, well, I'll go get a gold plater, and we'll gold-plate it with 18-karat, which will be really close to matching, you know, the brass.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been doing all day, is like, wow, you know, gold plate and rivet, just to try to finish off this one case so it looks, so we have the complete picture of what it could look like, you know?
That's awesome.
But I love
that's
that
awesome.
Stuff, man. I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. No, and that's just it. You know, product prototyping, that kind of thing, that's what keeps you going. That's the artist inside of you, where it's like, what else can I do with this fiberglass today? You know,
we make all our own molds, we make our own plugs, you know, we do everything.
That's great.
Here. And yeah, I get to tinker for the rest of my life. How cool is that?
No, that's what I tell people, like people, and especially in the corporate field, because for some reason people find it draining. I find it more challenging on the daily than rock and roll. Because the people that I'm dealing with are not techs, you know. Like, whenever I was on stage, I could throw a few pieces of lingo at a guitarist, and they understood what I meant. The dude with the PowerPoint clicker has no idea what magic elves I feed. No clue where to find the food for the magic elves. Is there a vending machine? Somebody downstairs with a cart? Can you get me a latte while you're getting that? Like, literally. So, you know, to know that you guys have this focus, this drive to go forward, to move forward in an industry, to keep inventing, keep that passion of creation going, is great. Is great. Because, like, I don't get paid a lick for work. I get paid to play with people's toys all day. That's what I tell people. I get paid for my knowledge of how to put out fires. If you see me move, something went horribly awry.
Yeah, if you see me running, run.
If you see me move, something went wrong. Other than that, like, if you see me just sitting there and maybe looking bored, show's going great.
That's easy money right there.
Like, my job is to be like George Jetson, you know? His job was to, like, Rudy ran the plant. George Jetson knew how to unhang Rudy. When Rudy glitched up, he knew how to fix Rudy. That was his job. So that was my job, was to fix the problem when it arose. And to stay sharp on that is my fun. Running wires daily, playing with things, that's my fun. So to know that you're still out there, even though you have picked up the mantle of Calton cases, things like that, you are no corporate owner. You are out there hands in the epoxy on the daily, playing with things, inventing things, moving things forward with design within this company. And that's so great to hear that there is still a company owner out there that is that literally elbow deep in their business.
Yeah. I would go crazy if I wasn't. I really would. And, you know, you got to be inventing all the time. I think you got to be agile to flex. And this COVID thing has taught that to everybody. I think now, you know, if you didn't have a few ideas when this hit, then it's pretty hard to get mobilized.
Exactly.
So we were really lucky because we had actually started doubling down on our website to rework it before it hit. And then we just said, well, let's just focus hard. And it kind of gave us the time to get it finished. I had a schedule, which was really cool.
Oh yeah.
And now we have we had a marketing social media meeting. Like, I didn't even know we needed to have this, but we have them now. You know, we have them every Wednesday, and it's the funnest day because it's just like there's three of us just going, ooh, we can do this, ooh, you know, and it's just all this energy, and, you know, a couple months ago, we had a couple of ideas, and now, like, we all have a stack of work to do because we keep throwing so many ideas at each other.
Yeah, right.
But, man, it's fun. It's fun.
That's great. That's good to hear that, you know, that is the kind of culture that you guys have built over there at Cult and Cases. Before we let you go real quick, Jeff, let everybody know where they can go to check out the cases, where they can go to submit their template or get measurements done on their instrument so that they can start looking at having their own custom Colton case made for them.
Well, so our website is CaltonCases.com, C-A-L-T-O-N, cases, C-A-S-E-S.com. And you can go there. And really, we have always worked with like boutique shops and luthiers. And that's really, if you're buying a boutique instrument, go through the luthier because that helps them make a little bit of money. And it's the same price as if you were to buy it from us.
Absolutely.
And certainly if you have a favorite shop that you already work with, go through that shop so that they get same thing that supports them. And often, you know, it'll have their label on it. So, which is really cool too. So it's kind of, you know, the whole package. You can buy direct from us. That's a new thing for us.
That's great.
And that's, you know, we say to people, like, if you already have a relationship with a luthier or a store, please go to them because we don't want to undersell or cut them out of the loop. But it is the same price.
Yeah. Well, and at you the can very find, least, yeah. take your baby over to your luthier and have him or her do the measurements for you.
Exactly.
Pay them a bench fee, pay them $50, and just say, I'm having a custom case made. If you could, please give me all the dimensions. Here's what they need. And have them do it. Throw some coin their way, and then go to y'all and have it custom built.
Yeah, exactly. That's a win-win for everybody. And, you know, like I said, we have all those are listed on our website. So if you go to the dealers or where to buy, not everybody carries inventory because they, you know, they understand as well that basically we build to order.
Sure.
So there's a few people that do, and it'll say on the website, you know, when you click on those dealers, luthiers, whether they have inventory or not. But if you're having something built, then we promise to deliver within 28 days. So we have a 28-day turnaround from the time that we approve. And that's way better than we used to be. We used to do 10 weeks, 8 weeks.
That is crazy for custom anything.
Yeah.
Less than a month turnaround from approval of the proof to deliver. That's nuts.
If you pick something on our website that like I said, we have instruments and models listed on there that we don't have a template for yet, but if it happens that we do, then you'll know when you complete the order and it'll be like, all right, you know, this is when you can expect to receive it. And,
that's great.
We have two really great sales guys, Matt and Brock. You can call them anytime about any question. You call them every day and ask about their order. And I promise you, you'll enjoy every conversation with them. They're really great guys. And, they love talking about you, your instruments, your stories, all that other stuff. They love hearing all that because it just helps them become better at what they do.
Well,
but anyway, you can call Matt or Brock to talk about it. You can send us an email through this on the sales page. If you have a question, we get two or three questions a day about, you know, do you have an instrument? Do you have a case for this or not? You can go to local retailers or luthiers, or you can just buy direct from us.
Great.
And the measurement forms are all in the website as well. They're under the resources, I believe, tab.
Links.
And also,
at the bottom of the homepage, there is a links section with measurements and tracing as well.
Yeah, they're buried a couple of places in there. Definitely, you know, check out our blog and see what we're adding to it. We're trying to add to it every couple of weeks, trying to add another story about artists or whatever. We're going to start writing stories about some of our luthier partners, some of our retail partners, the boutique shop partners. And then, let's see, what else? Gosh, so much stuff. Check out our Instagram. Please check out our Instagram. Follow us on Instagram. We're posting a lot of cool art pics and stuff there. We ask people for, like, you know, what should we call this? And if you send out the best title for an art image, then we'll send you some t-shirts or swag or whatever. We're always trying to give away t-shirts and stuff, stickers. We'll be posting it. We have our regular t-shirts online, but in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have a whole nother line of swag and merchandise on there because of these art pics that we're posting on Instagram.
That's great. So, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And tons of fun.
Well, thank you once again so much, Jeff, for taking the time to come on, talk about Calton Cases. If you are in the Austin area, check them out. They are located off 4th Street here in Austin, 3412 East 4th.
Come on by.
Their phone number, once again, to get a hold of their amazing sales team is 512-410-0303. You can find out more information about them at CaltonCases.com. Jeff, please do hold the line while we close everything out. While you're online checking out everything from Calton Cases, please do remember to stop on by TalkingSoundShow.com. That is where you can find all of the episodes. That's where you can find our gear section. There's all kinds of stuff there. If you're a local technician like me or traveling technician, that is also where you can find the tips and tricks section where we post tons of articles. You can find industry news. We've definitely got to link up the Calton Cases blog there in the industry news section so that all of you have an easy, quick, fast way to keep track of everything that they are doing, all the exciting new options, all the exciting new models. Make sure to stop on by our parent network, HD Universal. Tons of great shows, tons of great content there. HDUniversalNetwork.com is the website. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves. Take care of your hearing. Keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
This is Talking Sound.